it happens often enough, but every time it happens, it's like, it's an exciting thing. Somebody comes to the shul, they come to put on tefillin, they come for one time, it's one time I want to put on tefillin, and then they come back, I want to keep Shabbos, I want to keep kosher. I'm thinking of one specific individual, just like, he happened to come here on a rainy day, and he needed to he just thought he wanted a blessing that day, he put on tefillin. And one thing led to another. The Torah says this, one mitzvah, it's another mitzvah. And the question is, I mean, what is that? Where does that come from? What is it exactly that causes and fosters this kind of growth? And how can we tap into it? So this week, we have an additional Torah portion, Parshas Para, where we read about the laws of purity and impurity. The Torah talks about various kinds of purity and impurity, and the most severe of them is coming in contact with a dead body. And the Torah says that if someone comes in contact with a dead body, or if them to become purified again, they have to be sprinkled with the ashes of a parah adum. How does that work? So basically, they take a cow, which is completely red, and can even have two black hairs. It has to be a cow that was never used to work for anything else. And the cow was slaughtered on Har HaZeisim and the Mount Olives, and then it's burnt, and then its ashes are mixed with water. And then the third day after the guy came in contact with the dead body, he's sprinkled with the ashes. The seventh day after he comes in contact with the dead body, he's sprinkled with the ashes. Then he goes to the mikveh, and he is then again pure. And this law the Torah describes as a chok, as a super-rational law. One of the reasons that it's called super-rational is because, the most famous reason is because the Kohen who administers this process becomes impure, but the guy who is given the ashes, he becomes pure. So it's considered a super-rational thing. It makes you pure, makes you impure. But I want to focus tonight on something else, which is relevant to what I started with, which is the kind of energy that fosters growth. There was a famous teaching in the Talmud, Rabbi Yeshua ben Kavsoi. He said this, I always used to think that in order to make someone pure, you have to have one Kohen to make each person pure. So it has to be one-to-one. One Kohen for each impure person. Because it says in the Torah, the pure one will sprinkle on the impure one. So I always understood that it has to be one-to-one. If there's 10 David Kohens and the 10 Moshe Levins, yeah, then you could purify all 10 of them if you have 10 David Kohens. If you have only one David Kohen, then you can only purify one. I thought, in other words, was saying that purity and impurity is sort of like a struggle of, let's say, of two armies facing off against each other, and the stronger army wins. So if there's one to one, the purity overcomes the impurity, and then it could work. But then, said Rabbi Yeshua, I found in the treasury of Yavne that it's possible for one to purify many. It's possible for one person to purify many people. This I discovered, he says, in the treasury of Yavne. What's the treasury of Yavne? What is that? So Talmud says that in the 70 years, in the Common Era, 70 years, what's it called? CE. 70 years CE, thank you. No, I never said it. The temple was destroyed by the Romans, and before the temple was destroyed, the Romans laid siege around Jerusalem. And besides the problems of the Romans laying siege and attacking and pillaging, estimated about close to a million Jews were killed, maybe over a million Jews were killed at that time. Besides that, there was also another problem. The problem was the Jews themselves were fighting. The Jews were fighting about how to deal with the Romans. Some Jews wanted to fight with the Romans. Some Jews wanted to make peace with the Romans. And it was very, very, very vicious fight. So much so that those who wanted to war against the Romans did not want anyone leaving the city and send the wrong message to the Romans that we want to make peace because they wanted to fight. And one of the greatest sages of the time, or the greatest sage of the time, was Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai. Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai wanted to speak to Aspasianus, the Roman emperor, a general, and tell him that the Jews do want to make peace. But he couldn't get out of the city. So he had a nephew who was part of the leadership of this group. He was the head of them, thank you. And he, Rabbi Yochanan, wanted to ask him for permission to leave the city and talk to Aspasianus. But his nephew said, at this point, it's not going to work. It'll be dangerous for him to say it's okay. So, but he told him the following idea. The following idea was this. He should pretend that he got sick. And the rumor, he was already very elderly anyways. And they should spread the news that he got sick. And after he gets sick, they should spread the news that he died. And after he dies, you're not allowed to leave a dead body overnight in Jerusalem. So they should then take the body outside the city. That was the plan. And so they did this, and the students brought him out to Jerusalem in this coffin, and he meets Aspasianus. They had a remarkable conversation. Aspasianus was very impressed with Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai. Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai famously asked him for three things. He asked him to save Yavne. Yavne was a city full of sages. And he asked him to save, to find medicine for Abzadok, who was fasting incessantly to hope with his fasting and praying to stop the destruction of the temple. And he got sick because of it, to find a cure for Abzadok, and to save the dynasty of Rabbi Gamliel. Rabbi Gamliel, was he from Yehuda?
Yeah, he
was from Hillel. Hillel was from Yehuda. So it's the same, to say the Davidic dynasty. Is that what the idea was?
Yeah.
Okay. They say the Davidic dynasty. So that was his request, and everyone wonders if you're already speaking to the emperor, he's speaking to the general. He says, "What do you want?" So why did he ask him? Just go home, go back to Rome, leave us alone. Why did he ask for that? So the Talmud answers, because tafasta mubali tafasta. You try to ask for too much, you get nothing. Another answer is also that there was another Roman general that he wanted to know if this was a good idea to join this attack on Jerusalem. Apparently he had suspicion that this was not such a good idea. And he shot an arrow. Nero Caesar shot an arrow at Jerusalem. He shot an arrow actually not at Jerusalem. He shot an arrow to the east and the arrow went to Jerusalem. He shot an arrow to the west and it went to Jerusalem. He shot an arrow to the north and the south and the same thing. Every time he shot an arrow, it went to Jerusalem.
Wasn't it?
I don't think so. No. So because of this, but you would know better. But I don't think so.
Yeah,
but because of this, he converted to Judaism, and actually, his grandson was Remeir. Remeir was his grandson. So Rabbi Yochanan knew that the temple was already decided in heaven. The temple is going to be destroyed, and therefore, there's no point in asking for that. But instead, he asked to spare the city of Yavne. What happened in Yavne? In Yavne, there was a lot of the Judaism that was so familiar to us today was created in Yavne. Meaning, the idea of a synagogue replacing temporarily the temple and being a center of Jewish life was something that was formalized in Yavne. Much of our prayers was formalized in Yavne. The courts every month would announce when the new month is, the new year. That was continued in Yavne. So Yavne was a place of great scholarship that continues today. But the words that Rabbi Yeshua said was, I found in the treasury of Yavne. In the Talmud, Yavne is mentioned many times. But this is the only time the Talmud talks about the treasury of Yavne. What's the meaning of the treasury of Yavne? So the idea is this. Think about it. The Romans, they had their time, their 15 minutes of fame in history, and then they're out. I mean, you could find Romans in the museums today. But what was created in Yavne, you find in every corner of the world. You find Jews that are excited about Yiddishkeit, about Judaism, communities, men, women, and children of all ages, doing mitzvahs, doing Torah, all over the world. And all of that is a result of what happened in Yavne.
We're up 6% this year, actually.
Interesting. So Yavne is not just a place. Yavne is described as a oitzer, as a treasury. Call it a treasury because not just because it preserved something, but it teaches us something about the significance of who we are and the decisions that we make. I'm thinking tonight about my Rosh Hashiva, who passed away this week, just passed away day before yesterday, Abshner Zalman Ben Rafal Volshansky. He was Rosh Hashiva in Marston, New Jersey for many, many years. And Rabbi Yeshua says that I learned in Yavne that one person can make many people pure. It's not commensurate. I see what happened in Yavne. In Yavne, there was a few sages, and the Romans were hundreds and thousands and millions of Romans. And yet what happens is that Rome dies, and the Jewish people, what happened in Yavne, it kindled flames that kindled other flames and other flames and other flames, and continues to burn and shine till today. I'm thinking about Rabbi Volshansky, not just the many thousands of students that he taught, but personally, like myself, like what he gave to me personally. And I was, and when I came to Marstown at first, I was in Marstown, went back when there were dinosaurs in 1994, 95, 96. There was dinosaurs, people didn't really have cell phones, not many people had cell phones.
There's no cell phone that time?
No. No, wow, no. Crazy. I mean, there were cell phones, but it was not as common.
The cell phone came up in like 1999, 2000.
It was much more common then, yeah.
The
pay phones. My barrel was with me in Marstown. You remember Rabbi Volshansky? Rabbi Volshansky, he I was coming from yeshiva that was very, very, very like stark, as I say in Yiddish, very strong yeshiva. I was coming from Brunois in France, very strong yeshiva. When I came to Marstown on Thursday night, my first Thursday night in Marstown, it was a bit of a shell shock. Like, people I never saw before, yeshiva students with cartons of cigarettes and with kegs of beer and foul language. And I was like, and to come, we're having a farbringen. Like, that's not a farbringen. In Rwa, we were like in a cellar, and there was mashpia. We would sing a niggin, and we got into it. And it was like a whole, like, whoa, what? This is a farbringen. These are yeshiva students. So I was like a little bit like displaced. So one of the Rosh Hashivas, Rav Meir Tzibo L'Shalom, he said to me, there's a great advantage you have over here that you didn't have in Rwa. The advantage is that here you're doing things by yourself, not because of the atmosphere, which was wise words. Rabbi Volshansky, he called me over. He called me over, Rabbi Volshansky. And he said to me, this is right after the Rebbe's stroke. He said, Moshe, I want you to memorize the Gemara, Rashi, and Tosfos of the chapter of Talmud that we were studying at the time, chapter Meruba in Bava Kamma. So I'm looking at Meruba. Meruba means, so I'm thinking like, that's a pretty big ask. That's what I'm thinking to myself. And I'm going to ask him like, and what are you going to give me for that? That's what I was going to ask. That was exactly what I was going to ask. That was what I was going to ask. And he said to me, which I realized in retrospect must have been a deep place in neshama, because it stayed with me. He says, do this for the Rebbe. In other words, don't ask who it's for. This is for the Rebbe, something the Rebbe wants. And what that gave me was, it gave me a different atmosphere. I was now on a mission. I had to memorize this chapter of Talmud. The previous Rebbe describes that in the Talmud, there's certain Tosfos has some commentaries, which are, he calls them stomach-sized Tosfos, because Tosfos is like sometimes like small and narrow, and some Tosfos are like wide and long. Yeah. And Meruba has many, many stomach-sized Tosfos in. So Volshansky put me into the stomach-sized Tosfos, and that's what I was submerged in the middle of this atmosphere, which wasn't the best. It was a challenging year for Marstown. Marstown had many good years, and that year it wasn't such a good year. So he, what he did was, he looks at the whole yeshiva, and he says, this guy, I need to help this guy. And I made it, and he put me in a direction. More humorous story about Volshansky. I was in Marstown, and I thought I was very smart. And he gave a class once, and he was very passionate when he gave a class. He was very into it. I mean, some Rosh Hashivas, they speak in a very soft and subtle way. Not him. He was like, fire and brimstone. And this is what Rabbi Levi Yitzchak, this is what the Tesis, this is the Gemara. Wow. Amazing. And I just realized that his insight in the Talmud was going to create a new insight that I had in the Talmud. And I wrote about 10 pages explaining my new insight in the Talmud based upon his class. I presented it to him. Roshansky, I just wanted to look at what I wrote. He looks at it, looks at me, I think, that good. He looks at me, he looks at it. He says, Moshe, I says, yes, I think I have created a monster. In other words, you are way off. But he did it in such a kind way, in such a friendly way. So even though it was a big blow to my ego, it didn't like derail me. It was like, okay, all right, fine.
What happens if people don't learn and then like don't follow up?
So the yeshiva. Okay. So the point is like this. The point is that Yavne, Rabbi Yeshua said, I learned from the treasury of Yavne. The treasury of Yavne means that Yavne is something that is not just a place, but it's something that caused a revolution of Judaism that still continues till today. It's not just one place. In fact, there's another text in the Talmud. A text in the Talmud reads, I found in the air of Yavne, the atmosphere of Yavne, there's something that you can give someone with specific, you know, ideas, words, customs, things, stories. Then there is something you give someone with the air that you breathe, with the atmosphere that you create. And that's something that Rav Olshansky of Hashem, that he succeeded in doing for many people, including for me. He put me in a different atmosphere. I wasn't around it. There was no cigarette cartons and beer and kegs of beer anymore. I was on a mission. Anyway, so this is what Rabbi Yeshua learned there, that one person can purify many people. He learned that the power of good, the power is eternal, it's infinite. It's not just one little thing. There was a great Baal Musar named Shimon Shadron. He was one to take his kids to the doctor. And he was a very gifted speaker. People come all over to hear his lengthy and full of very, very juicy speeches. And one time he said the following. He said, I was going to the doctor with my kids. On the way to the doctor, I meet my rabbi. My rabbi's like, what are you doing? I'm like, taking my kids to the doctor. He says, yeah, but what are you doing? Taking my kids to the doctor. Don't you realize what you're doing? I said, what do you mean? He says, first of all, you have to realize you're doing an act of kindness to your children. You're also doing an act of kindness to your wife because she doesn't have to take them. You're taking them. Third of all, and most importantly, you're listening to your children. You're talking to your children. Do you realize that right now you're building their future? You're creating who they're going to be. This is not just a walk to the doctor. You have to realize this action is something that has a far greater repercussion to go in the future. So this is what the Torah wants us to think about in this week's Torah portion, that one person has the power of many. And this is something that we see from the Rebbe that I don't think has any parallel in history. But the Rebbe teaches us about this concept. Think about it. Think about my grandfather, Rabbi Fogel Melo Shalom, going to Worcester, Massachusetts, and there's nothing there. There's nothing. And he has to go and he has to create Judaism. He's like, you know, you could think you're like a lonely guy. No one understands you. They think you don't understand them. And you're going to bring them Judaism. And it doesn't make any sense. How is it going to work? There's another message here that we learned from the parad with the red heifer. The Torah says, the ashes, she mixed with water. What does water represent? What's ashes represent? Ashes represent the end of something. Ashes are about a period of life that's ending. Person gets married, so the end their time of being single. Person has a child, end their time of they become a father. Person passes away, they end their time in this world, they begin their time in the next world. Wherever the sun sets in one place, it rises somewhere else. So the idea of ashes is the idea of the conclusion of something. The idea of water is a creation of something new. A person is born in water. The world was created, you know, and still is covered majority with water. The water causes things to grow. Water represents life and growth and renewal. And ashes represent the end of something. And in a personal level, you could be depressed. You could have an addiction. And there's a part of your life that, you know, you feel like you're stuck and things are over. The Torah says always mix the ashes with water. Always realize that that where you are right now, and things have taka, it seems, have you come to a full stop, you're stuck somewhere, you should add water. And that's what the Rebbe instructed his students and anyone who would listen, share the water. The Jewish people after the Holocaust, a lot of ashes all over the world. There's things of all 6.5 million Jews that were killed. And the Rebbe enters over here, and the Rebbe says these ashes, they are ashes. But if they put water and to go into this town, which it doesn't seem like anyone in this town is interested in anything in Judaism, but the Rebbe says, no, bring the water, you'll see rejuvenation. My cousin, Rabbi Yosef Levin in Palo Alto, he was having a very difficult time in his career for many reasons. And he was by the Rebbe for a Shabbos. And he felt like the Rebbe was talking to him personally. And it was something that really changed the future of Chabad and Palo Alto and the other institutions that were created by Chabad and Palo Alto. The Rebbe says, a young man is in a valley. And Palo Alto is in the, what's it called? The San Fernando Valley? Different valley. Which valley? I don't know. It's in a valley. Young man's in a valley. That was speaking about the Haftorah of Ezekiel, the Valley of the Dry Bones. And Hashem says to Ezekiel, what do you see? He says, I see lots of dry bones. And so what do you, said, similarly, a person's in a city, and he feels everyone around them is like dry bones, and they're very dry. They're not interested at all. And the Rebbe said, so Hashem tells the prophet, speak to the dry bones. Tell the dry bones, listen to the word of Hashem. In other words, tell them words of Torah. Share words of Torah with them, and you'll see rejuvenation. You'll see that there's some, that life comes to them. You'll see it's not the way you think, that they're very dry and no one's interested. Just add, in other words, in the context of this week's Torah portion, you see ashes, but add water. You see something ending, but realize that there's always a power to begin again. Just because something has ended doesn't mean it's over. On the contrary, you see ashes. The ashes mean the end of one period, but that means it's a power not to continue, a power to cause a renewal. Where you see, you don't be afraid of the ashes. There is pain, there is mourning. But where there is ashes and there is mourning, there's also something new, there's also renewal. And he came back to Palo Alto. He said that there was this guy he used to always have a cigar with every week. He used to have a cigar together. And when he came back, he says to this guy, and he says, Joe, you want to learn something about the Torah portion this week? They're like, all right. He shares an idea of Torah with him. And wow, that was interesting. And it changed him. And it changed the rabbi. And it changed other people. It's this idea of that Rabbi Yeshua learned in the ear of Yavne, in the treasury of Yavne, the treasure that we each of us has, that we and the treasure every Jew has. We just need to add the water. To add the water until, as we'll see, learned in Maimonides, the conclusion of Maimonides the other day, the Ram concludes that Mashiach will come and the whole world will be full of knowledge of Hashem like water covers the ocean bed. So we see this happen immediately, the card of Mamish. And any questions or comments or criticism or tomatoes?
So it's mean one coin can save 1,000, right? One coin can make it to 1,000. But yeah. this and we're living in the place that coins less and less every time. Why like this? Not coins so much.
A coin?
Coin, yeah.
A coin, there is a mitzvah. Well, you could put a coin in the stucco box, you could tip the scale in Mashiach. The Ram says the world's on a scale, half mitzvah, half the opposite. Mm-hmm. One good thought, one good word, one good action could tip the scale and make Mashiach come. Okay. It's not just a coin. The coin of fire.
Yeah. The coins just have a huge responsibility, but it's